fearfulness and trembling are come upon me, and horror hath overwhelmed me. Please notice the word overwhelmed. Go to chapter 61 and verse 2. I'll begin in verse 1. Hear my cry, O God, attend unto my prayer. From the end of the earth will I cry unto thee when my heart is overwhelmed. Lead me to the rock that is higher than I. Notice again, overwhelmed. Chapter 77. And verse number 3. I remembered God and was troubled. I complained, and my spirit was overwhelmed. Selah. Once again, we take note of the word overwhelmed. Psalm 102. Psalm 102 and verse 1. That's not the verse I wanted, so let me just look for a moment and see if I see it. I don't see it. The entire passage is speaking of the feelings of the heart and soul when one is overwhelmed. But let's move to 142. 142 and verse number 3. Psalm 142 and verse 3. When my spirit was overwhelmed within me, then thou knewest my path. Notice again the idea of being overwhelmed. And then chapter 143 and verse 4. Therefore is my spirit overwhelmed within me. My heart within me is desolate. It's clear from the reading of those scriptures that the experience called or the feeling of being overwhelmed, having too much to handle, unable to cope, is very real. And it's really something that's going on inside of a man because of what's going on the outside. There's always something going on the outside, but inside we're hearing about this feeling of overwhelmedness. We're living in a generation and a day and time when suicide is the frequent contemplation of people from every walk of life. And I believe the basis of that contemplation and consideration is due to being overwhelmed. Feeling alone, feeling like it's too much. There's no way I can handle it. I don't have anyone. And many times, including God, feeling like God is not there. Feeling alone and overwhelmed. If I can, with God's help, I want to help you this morning. Go backward a couple of pages to Psalm 139. Marvelous, wonderful psalm. It wasn't long ago. It was a few years ago, but that's not long, really, that Peter Burrell, working with the young people in the teen Sunday school class, challenged them. I don't know if he challenged them or whatever, but the bottom line is they were all memorizing Psalm 139. I found out about it. I memorized Psalm 139. Now, I could not sit here and just quote it to you while you read it and check me out, but I did work on it and memorize it, and it was a blessing to me and a help to me. And I want you to think about the truth here. And you're not going to find the word overwhelmed here, but you are going to find the idea. But not in the sense we've read moments ago, but in a new sense. Let's go. Psalm 139, verse number 1. And I'm probably going to talk my way through the text. O Lord, Thou hast searched me and known me. You'll notice that those are past tense. This is fact that he's stating. God, you've searched me and known me. I'm acknowledging that fact. Thou knowest my down sitting, when I sit down, and when I get up, mine uprising. Thou understandest my thought afar off. We can understand that he knows from heaven. That's what we might be tempted to think, that heaven is far removed from earth, and in heaven he understands our thought. But you forget that God is everywhere present. In him we live and move and have our being, according to Acts chapter 17. He's not in us, we are in him. He does dwell in us when as redeemed people, but we live in him. He's everywhere, present. He's always there. He understands our thought in its very genesis, in its very beginning, in the very conception of the thought. He understands the thought. He understands the root of it. Get it now? He knows when you sit down. He knows when you get up. And he understands your thoughts afar. He doesn't just know your thoughts and see them coming. He understands them. I've had some pretty scary thoughts. And people who are overwhelmed have some pretty serious thoughts. He understands them. Thou compassest, verse 3, that means you encircle, you surround my path and my lying down, and art acquainted with all my ways. Not just my ways when I'm in church, when I'm doing good, when I'm doing right. You're acquainted with all my ways. I don't know about you, but there have been a lot of ways that I've been on and traveling down that are not good. And he knows them all. There's some ways I've thought about traveling down, tempted to travel down. He knows. There is not a word, verse 4, in my tongue. But lo, O Lord, thou knowest it altogether. Thou hast beset me behind and before. You're out in front of me, and you've got my back, and laid thine hand upon me. Here's the verse. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. That you know every word, every thought, even in its beginning, and you understand it, and you see me sit down, and you see me get up, and you see me walking. You know everywhere I've gone, everywhere I've been. You know everything I do. You know everything I think. Though the things I think may be unknown to others and often unnoticed by myself, you are aware. You know what rule I walk by. You know what goal or end I walk toward. You know what company I walk with. You know everywhere I go. You know every word I speak. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. You know what he's saying? I'm overwhelmed. I'm overwhelmed with your knowledge of me. It is high. I cannot attain to it. Whither shall I go from thy spirit? Or whither shall I flee from thy presence? If I ascend up into heaven, thou art there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, thou art there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there shall thy hand lead me, and thy right hand shall hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, even the night shall be light around me. Yea, the darkness hideth not from thee, but the night shineth as the day. The darkness and the light are both alike to thee. In other words, again he's saying, if I go high, you're there. If I go low, you're there. If I go far and wide, you're there. You're everywhere I am. You're everywhere I shall be. You're everywhere I could be. You're everywhere. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It's too high. I can't attain it. I'm overwhelmed. Verse 13, for thou hast possessed my reins. We're familiar with the idea of reins, and they are the means of exercising control over a great beast, a horse, a creature with great power and with a will and with strength. And we use the reins to correct. Sometimes we let the horse have its head, and it just goes where it wants to and does because we let it run free. But there comes a time when we have to rein it in. So what he's saying is, you are in possession of my reins. You're the one in control of me. You're everywhere I ever will be, everywhere I've ever been. You know everything I've ever thought, everything I've ever said, everything I've ever done. You understand it all. And even in the beginning, you've been in control. Thou hast covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise thee. I'm overwhelmed. All I can do is praise you. For I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are thy works, and that my soul knoweth right well. You're made in the image of God, and you can act like you don't know it, but you do know it, and you know it well, that God is God, and you're not. And that God is powerful and able to do exceeding abundantly of all that you ask or think. That you are a fearfully and wonderfully made creation of God, you know it right well. You just don't want to acknowledge it sometimes because of sin or because of selfishness or stubbornness. But he said, my soul knows right well. My substance, verse 15, was not hid from thee when I was made in secret and curiously wrought in the lowest part of the earth. Thine eyes did see my substance, yet being unperfect. And in thy book, all my members, my hands, my feet, my eyes, the color of my eyes, the color of my hair, everything, DNA, all my members were written in your book. You had a record. You had a plan. And in continuance, in progression, they were fashioned when as yet there was none of them. There weren't any hands, any feet, any eyes, any ears, any nose, but you had them written down, what you wanted, what you determined to do, and it happened as you had written it down. And they were fashioned in continuance, in progression, in a process. How precious also are thy thoughts unto me, O God. How great is the sum of them. If I should count them, count what? The thoughts of God unto me? If I should count them, they're more in number than the sand. When I awake, I am still with thee. You know, I look at that verse and I get this thought in my mind that when I was a boy, I heard the expression, if you can't sleep, count sheep. And have you ever seen the little cartoonish picture of that? Somebody lying there and there's a fence, and in their thought process, in their mind, there's a fence, and there's sheep going over the fence and they're counting the sheep. And the idea is that the monotony of doing that, you'll soon fall asleep. You'll take your mind off whatever it was that's bothering you, and the monotony, you'll fall asleep. You understand that? Well, here's what I get. The psalmist is saying, when I count your thoughts, so when I can't sleep, I start counting your thoughts toward me. and it puts me to sleep. When I awake, you're still there. I fell asleep thinking about you and your thoughts toward me, and when I wake up, you're still there. And then a little parenthetical aside here for the next couple of verses. Surely thou wilt slay the wicked, O God. Depart from me, therefore, ye bloody men, for they speak against thee wickedly, and thine enemies take thy name in vain. Do not I hate them, O Lord, that hate thee? Am not I grieved with those that rise up against thee? I hate them with perfect hatred. I count them mine enemies. And now he returns full circle to where he began. When he began, he said, thou hast searched me and known me. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts. And see if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. Have you ever heard the expression, beauty is in the eyes of the beholder? It is. There are things that are regarded beautiful by others that you cannot understand why. And perhaps you regard things as beautiful, but others cannot comprehend why. Beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. Who's the beholder in Psalm 139? It's God. God is doing an intensive investigation, a thorough examination of the individual's life, not Israel's life, one individual's life. And he knows everything. He understands all his thoughts, his words, his deeds. He knows everywhere he goes, everywhere he's been. He knows his thoughts. As a matter of fact, he designed him intimately and intricately to be what he is. And yet, if I go outside of this, though it doesn't say it here, if I go outside of Psalm 139, I know the Bible teaches me unquestionably that God loves me. The one who knows the most about me, the one who never misses a detail, the one who wrote the book on me, and who could write a book about me, and who will open the books about me at the judgment seat, loves me. I am his special creation. So number one, leave this room this morning with the knowledge that you, as David, are the special creation of God. You are a special, purposive creation of Almighty God. He formed you and made you. Where do you get your self-image? Do you get it from the reflection you see in the mirror? Wish I wasn't so fat. Wish I had more hair. My nose is awful big. Why do my ears stick out like that? And we go away overwhelmed with our ugliness, our undesirability, our unworthiness. Is that where you get your self-image? From the reflection you see in the mirror? Maybe not. Maybe you get your self-image from the reaction you get from others. They tell you you're stupid or fat or ugly or you'll never amount to anything. And they make fun of you and they poke fun of you and they give you a difficult time. Is that where you get your self-image? Are you overwhelmed by what you see in the mirror? Are you overwhelmed by what others think of you? I'm telling you, beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. And you don't know yourself, and others don't know you like God knows you. And God, who knows you, says, oh, wow. Wow. I can't stop thinking about you. You know, when you're in love with somebody, you think about them, and you can't stop thinking about them. If you love something, you can't stop thinking about it. It's keep coming back to you. If I was able to count them, the psalmist said, they're more in number than the sand. It's an impossibility. It overwhelms me to think that you love me like you do, and that I matter to you. Well, you do. because you're a special creation of God. You are special. The word special, by the way, means uncommon, noteworthy, unique, particularly favored, exceptional, exclusive, extraordinary. Did you know over 7 billion people on planet Earth and there's only one of you? There may be somebody else who resembles you, and so we say, whoa. And they may even call out your name to that person and they don't respond, and yet you realize, oops, that's not them, but it sure looks like them. But do you know your DNA will tell the truth? You have a DNA that's different than anybody else in the world. Only God can do that. And the DNA determines what color your eyes are and your hair and how big your nose is and how long your neck or how short your neck is, whether your ears stick out or lay back flat. God designed all that. And He's pretty happy with His work. And He thinks about you all the time. Breaks my heart to think that people are ready to put an end, smash, squeeze the life out of that which God created, that which God made. Really, what I'm saying to you this morning, you have a choice of who or what overwhelms you. Thoughts of suicide and low self-worth and readiness to give in and throw in the towel come from being overwhelmed by what you see and what others see. But when you start thinking about what God sees and how God lives and how God thinks of you and get overwhelmed by that, it'll help you. What overwhelms you this morning? I am a special creation of God. Number two, God has a special plan for my life. He wrote it all in a book when there was nothing. And then in continuance, it was fashioned according to what He wrote in the book. In other words, He's like an architect. He starts out with a drawing, with a plan, and He has something He's going to do, or something He's going to accomplish in my life. My life has meaning. My life has purpose. There's something He wants to do, and there's something that He is able to do if I will allow Him to do, that is unique, that is extraordinary, that's exceptional, that's exclusive. It's a special plan for my life. I'm not just an accident. I am a purposeful creation of God, and He made me because He has a use for me, has a plan for me, something He wants to do in me. Thirdly, there are special problems for me. Or let me put it this way, God has a special process for me to go through. Once again, if He knows everything about me and everything I am is designed by Him, He's taking me through a process and He's accomplishing His plan because He wants to bring glory to Himself. And like a potter working with the clay, He's always thinking about the clay and what do I do next? What needs to happen next? How is the clay responding? And what can I do? The clay's not responding as it should, so I need to add a little water here. I need to work it a little more. I need to start over again. I need to push in a little bit here or press down a little bit there. There's a process. There are problems that we have to endure. Over and over and over again in Scripture, that truth is illustrated, perhaps more vividly than any other place, by the life of Joseph. Joseph was a special person to his dad. And God revealed that He had a special plan for Joseph. He revealed it to him in a dream. He said, one day your dad and your brothers are going to bow down and worship you. He gave him two different dreams that illustrated that truth. And then begins the process. And Joseph is hated by his brothers. They think to kill him. One brother steps in and intercedes on his behalf, and so they throw him in a pit. And while they're contemplating what their next move is, along comes a group of slave traders or merchants heading to Egypt. And they come with the idea, hey, let's sell him to them and they can take him to Egypt. That'll be the last we hear of him and our problems are solved. So they sell him into slavery. He goes to Egypt, becomes a slave in the house of a man by the name of Potiphar. He's a responsible young man, a good young man, a godly young man, a trustworthy young man. And when he would not respond to the advances of his master's wife, she lies about him, and the master has him thrown into prison. Now he goes from being a slave to being a prisoner. He's in jail. And in jail, he's a good young man, a responsible young man, a trustworthy young man, so that the jailer puts everything into his hand and trusts him with everything. Along come two prisoners that come from the palace of the king of Egypt, the ruler of Egypt, the ruler of the known world at the time. And they both have dreams, and he interprets the dreams, and it happens according to the dream. One dies, the other one is restored to his position. As the one who's restored to his position leaves jail, he makes a promise to Joseph that he's going to tell the king about him and represent his case. This is not right. You shouldn't be here. I'm going to tell the king about it, and there'll surely be an investigation. But he doesn't. He forgets. Until one day, sometime down the road, the king has a dream. And they, oh yeah, I know who could help the king, Joseph. So he tells him. The king goes and gets Joseph. Joseph interprets a dream with God's help. And the next thing you know, Joseph is the ruler of the land, second in power only to Pharaoh. And sure enough, a famine arises in the land. Egypt is prepared for the famine because of Joseph's leadership. His brethren come down, and ultimately they bow before their brother. They don't know it's their brother, but they're bowing before their brother, just like God said would happen. God had a special plan for Joseph's life, no question about it. But there was a process. There were special problems that were involved in the process that meant he had to go through that to get where God wanted him to be. And it's not different for you, and it's not different for me. David went through all kinds of problems and challenges and difficulties and struggles, but he said, when I stop and think about it, I'm overwhelmed with the fact that God, nothing escapes God's attention. He authored my life. Everything about me is according to his plan, and there's nothing that ever escapes him. He's in front of me. He's behind me. He's everywhere around me. I can't escape him in any fashion or any way. I'm overwhelmed with God's plan for my life. And he didn't let the problems of his life overwhelm him. So I'm a special creation of God. God has a special plan for my life. There are special problems and a special process for me to go through in my life. And finally, there is a special person who is with me all the days of my life. A special, capital S, capital P, capital E, capital C, capital I, capital A, capital L, exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point, underlined, 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 circled, circled again, special person who is always with me. Who's like unto God? Who is like unto God? Who can design a human being in all of the intricacies of that human being, and have a plan and purpose for his life, and be everywhere that person ever goes. Never, that person is never out of his sight. Every thought that he thinks, he's aware of and understands. Every word that he speaks, he knows. Every path that he takes, he knows. That's pretty special. So you might be overwhelmed, as we read in those verses as we began, by the problems of your life, the pressures of your life. The answer is get overwhelmed with the person who is with you from beginning to end and who will never leave you. And the last word in the psalm is everlasting. Lord, search me and know me. See if there be any wicked way in me and lead me in the way everlasting. He'll never leave you nor forsake you. He loves you more than you can comprehend. The problem is you're not overwhelmed with God. you ought to be. When your God is big, your problems are small. When your problems are big, then that means your God must be pretty small. Don't tell your problems to God. Tell your problems about God. Say, hello, Mr. Trouble, Mr. Problem. You think to scare me and alarm me and overwhelm me and turn me upside down and inside out and leave me in the ditch, half dead, but I want to tell you something. Have you ever been introduced to my God? Let me tell you about my God, with whom nothing is impossible, who can do all things, the God of the universe. I'm not afraid of you. I have a God that's bigger than you. See, our problems are not our problem. They may overwhelm us, but that's not the problem. The reason we're overwhelmed is not our problems. We're overwhelmed, and our problem is the way we react to our problems. We react to our problems as though God's not able, as though God has forgotten us, as though problems aren't a part of God's plan and design for our lives. When we get overwhelmed with God and the understanding that God is not like a man, when he sets out to do something, when he designs something, when he purposes something, he's going to accomplish it. He won't abandon it. He won't forsake it. He won't leave it. You can resist him if you want and allow yourself to be overwhelmed by your problems. But if you understand the truth of what he's revealed about himself, you can escape that by being overwhelmed with God. And rejoice. It's not the problems that are my problem. It's my reaction to my problems. That's my problem. Overwhelmed. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain it. Whither am I going to go? Where am I going to go to get out of your presence? When you go back and you think about the words of those guys that were saying, I'm overwhelmed, I'm overwhelmed, I'm overwhelmed, I'm overwhelmed. You know what they're saying? They're saying, I can't see God. I can't find God. They're forgetting that God is there. He can't be anywhere but there. He is never anywhere but present in your life or in my life. So what is it that gives you self-worth and value and makes you enjoy and treasure life? The reflection you see in the mirror, the reaction you see from others, or the revelation you have been given by God? I hope it's a revelation, because you're wonderful. You're special. There's no one like you. And God has a plan for you that's unique. And he has problems for you that are unique. You're not going to be the first person in the history of the world to go through life without problems. But you have a problem serving God. And problems are the means in which God accomplishes his purposes in your life. And no matter what happens, you will never be forsaken. You may feel overwhelmed and underwater, and you can't see God, but he's right there where he's always been and always will be. And when you get overwhelmed with that, everything's on the way to healing. God help us to be overwhelmed. Your value and my value is not determined by others' treatment of us or by our own actions. What God thinks of me is what matters most. And the psalmist said, man, this is overpowering. This is too much. I can't get it. I can't attain to it. Let's pray. Father in heaven,